This is episode 118 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. After a three-week hiatus, I'm back. I moved. New house, new studio, new everything. Still working out some of the bugs, but we're rocking and rolling. Got lots of amazing guests planned with some great info and amazing stories. Since social distancing and virtual shows are all the rage right now, I thought I'd bring you a real pro, someone that's been doing it since this whole pandemic thing started. Today, you're going to learn how to communicate social distancing to your client, how to increase audience interaction, creative ways of marketing your virtual or social distance show, how to keep children safe when doing your virtual show, and all sorts of excellent ideas for keeping that social distance while still being able to perform at your best. Enjoy the show!
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Today, we'll be talking to one of the top family entertainers in the country about social distancing shows. In these crazy times where every entertainer is looking for ways to do their show, Zach is going to help us out. He's even created a guide for socially distancing shows that you can have for free. Variety Artist, I give you Zach Alexander.
Hey.
How's it going, Zach?
I'm doing great. I'm super excited to be here. We're going to have a lot of fun.
I am too. Now, before this crazy pandemic thing, what were you doing before?
Before, I was very invested in the family entertainment market in New York, specifically the Westchester area, north of New York City. I'll go to New York City if someone asks nicely, but I like Westchester because they have driveways I can park in.
Oh, yeah. Now, when you say family entertainment, are you talking about birthday parties, schools, libraries? What are you talking about?
It's kind of a mix of all of that, but I always tell folks my show is a family show, not a kid show. It works better when there's some grown-ups in the room to laugh at some of the jokes for just for them and create a little bit more of the chaos. Mm-hmm. But I do library shows in the summer. I do a lot of fairs and festivals at the local community events here in the area. And of course, birthday parties here and there when people ask me to do them as well.
Right. Well, at least before March 10th or 11th or 12th, huh? Those libraries and schools.
Yeah. Especially my summer camp season. They were like, maybe next year, bud.
Yeah. I had in 2 days, I think I had 60 shows canceled.
I remember that I had that exact same day occur to me too.
Oh, it was insane. So how did you pivot your business from doing live shows, or are you still doing live shows, or what are you doing?
So right now I'm doing a mix. Since I am in the Northeast, some people are beginning to feel a little bit more comfortable having entertainment in their home. It's not quite the same as it used to be, and I've written a new show to accommodate that. But I've also pivoted to digital shows as well. I wrote a brand new hour-long digital show, and I've been pushing that out to people. It's really funny how that show came about. I figured I was just going to take a break, you know, take a long vacation when this all hit. But yeah. Someone called me and said, hey, do you have a virtual show? We want to do a program for all of these apartment complexes. It was a company that does like entertainment for apartment complexes. And they were like, we need to deliver something to our clients and we have nothing. Hmm. So they found me online and said, hey, can you develop an online thing for us? And I was like, well, if I'm being asked to do it, I'm going to do it right. So I did a ton of research and built up a brand new studio all from scratch. And then their company went out of business and I never did any of the shows they asked me for.
Oh no.
But yeah. But once I had all that equipment and all the practice and all the time in, I was like, well, I'll put this show on the road myself. And so I started marketing it and it took off. Like people really were appreciative of having something to do besides watch YouTube. It was that interactive component of it is something people really crave. And I was really glad I was able to deliver that to them.
Well, how did you start marketing your virtual shows?
I first got started just getting in touch with a lot of my old clients who I'd worked with in the past. Mm-hmm. I didn't hit them with a marketing message up front. I just sent them a, hey, I know things are crazy right now. You know, from my family to yours, we wish you well. And then a lot of times that started a conversation, you know, because I'm on good terms with most of my clients. I send them a nice email from time to time. So they, you know, they wrote back, oh, thank you so much for getting in touch. We're so glad to hear from you. Thank you for wishing us well. You know, what are you up to these days? I know you're probably not doing shows anymore. And then, you know, they've given me an in.
They open
now
the
I
door.
Get to tell them what I'm up to. And says, oh, well, I put together this brand new virtual show. It's a ton of fun. A lot of people are booking it. You know, would you be interested in seeing it? Like, yeah, that sounds great. Didn't even know I wanted a virtual show, but now I do.
Ah.
That was that was a big part of the initial push, was just connecting with my base of people who already like and know my show.
Now you're doing virtual shows and some live shows, right?
That's true. Yep. I wrote a brand new 45-minute live show. That was a big challenge for me because before I highly emphasized getting kids up on stage, getting parents up on stage, pitting them against each other, you know, all kinds of wacky stuff happening in the show. All that had to go away. And I was like, is there anything in my show left? I started from scratch. I was like, what can I take from sort of like the stage illusionist perspective? What makes their tricks work? Why are they entertaining to watch even though there's not someone on stage? And can I learn from something from that and apply it to my closer up, you know, family living room shows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've learned a lot of tips along the way. I can be happy to break down some of that for you if you want to hear about it.
Yeah, of course. How about now?
Okay. Yeah. Well, no time like the present.
Yeah.
So one of the things that blew my mind, and I don't know why I never realized it before, and I'm honestly ashamed to admit it, that kids like interacting with the magician. It's not that they like being on stage, it's that they like interacting with you.
Mm-hmm.
And once I realized that, my whole paradigm shifted. Everything that I used to do in my old show with getting a kid up on stage, 9 times out of 10, I can do that exact same interplay, that exact same by play mm-hmm. with the child still in the audience. They just want to stand up and play with me. It's not that they want to be on stage.
Yeah.
I was projecting myself because at that age, I wanted nothing else but to be on stage. I wanted people to look at me, and you know, that's why I'm an entertainer now, because that's the kind of kid I was.
Yeah, you and me both.
Exactly. For most kids, that's not the actual draw. Being up on stage isn't the fun part of them. The fun part is me and getting to play with me and interact with me and say silly things back at me and try to get one over on me and see if they can fool the magician and do something I've never seen before.
One of the things that I found, and it kind of goes on to what you're saying, when the kids are involved and they're in the audience, if you involve one or two, all of a sudden the entire audience wants to be involved instead of only those two kids that you happen to have on stage.
Yeah, that's very true. I haven't done a lot of big shows where there's, you know, usually the number of kids who are in the audience at these live shows, it's one family's worth of kids.
Mm.
So it's almost like they were the kids who I would have had volunteered up on stage anyway. So that sort of barrier between the audience and on stage barely exists because they're such small shows. But I'm sure as I get to do bigger shows, but still maintaining that social distance, I'll probably run into a lot more instances of that.
Now, have you found that that is the case also in the virtual shows? Kind of similar thing?
Virtual shows are an interesting case. I've done some shows where I see nothing of the audience during the show, things like on Facebook Live or YouTube live streams. There is an element of truth to that. When I tell the kids to interact with the screen, they interact with the screen, even if on some deep level they know I can't hear them.
Mm-hmm.
Just giving them something fun to do, kids want to do it. And I think we see that in things like Dora the Explorer and Blue's Clues, the same thing. Even though as a four-year-old, I knew Steve on Blue's Clues couldn't hear me. But when he said, you know, point out to me that there's a clue, I wanted to do it. There's something fun about playing along with the screen.
Yeah.
So that happens in the show. The kids just genuinely want to interact, even if you're not interacting as deeply back with them.
Yeah, and it seems like the longer this goes on, the more and more they want to interact. They need something.
Maybe we're all just going stir crazy. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, do you have rules in your contract? Do you talk it over with the family? How do you go about when you're booking it, kind of making the rules of social distancing?
To some extent, it has been a politicized issue among some families. So I very carefully navigate that in our conversation. I start up by asking, are you planning to do this show outside? If they say yes, then I know they're probably going to be safe. And then I ask, you know, are you planning to engage in any social distant activities? And if they say yes, I'm like, okay, then I can tell you about how my show meets CDC guidelines and that becomes valuable to you.
Mm-hmm.
When I was first starting to sell that, I would open with that and the people were like, oh, we don't want to deal with all that nonsense. Forget about it.
Right.
I now pre-check that is something valuable to them before I begin highlighting it. That's, they're still going to get it when I get there, but I don't make a big deal out of it unless it's something that's going to help win them over and decide to go with the show after all.
Now Sean Jay, who I interviewed, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago, he had a real interesting idea. He's performing for, I forget it, after school care, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually performing on the other side of the window of the kids.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. So all the kids could see him and hear him, because I don't know if he put a speaker or whatever
he'd
did
have to definitely
get them, yeah, to hear them. But I thought that was really interesting way to keep everybody safe.
Definitely, that's the most safe you can be. I've been erring on the side of outside and putting up a tape line and standing 10 feet away from the tape line. But I mean, yeah, he's definitely taking it to another level. That's smart thinking.
With doing the virtual shows, mm-hmm. some parents have concerns about keeping their kids safe, you know, with Zoom for some reason. Well, I know the reason, but they have concerns about safety with Zoom. Do you have any ideas on how to keep kids safe when you're using Zoom for your virtual shows?
I try as hard as I can to convince the families not to actually use Zoom for that exact reason. I've been using a program called StreamYards,
okay.
which handles all of the technology side of it. And so most of the people are actually watching it through a Facebook or a YouTube live broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can set up a private room that only people I send the link to can come in. And those are my volunteers.
Are you able to view them in the private room?
Yes. Yeah. We see each other face to face, and that's interacted in real time. And then everything that we do together is recorded and then put onto YouTube with a 10-second delay. And I'm able to control how many volunteers appear on screen, when they come in and out, change the background. It's a pretty powerful program, and it's not as hard to set up as like Epicam or what's the other one? OBS.
I didn't
have to mess with any of that. This kind of just works out of the box.
Mm-hmm. And when you're doing social distancing shows, do you have a rule for 10 feet, 20 feet?
I think the CDC guideline right now is 6 feet. So I err on the side of 10 feet. So I put up a barrier. Yeah, usually a tape line with some orange safety cones. The kids, you know, they instinctively come up to the line and they stop there.
Of course.
So I do that. But the cones help mitigate the antsy ones who want to scoot that little extra bit closer. That actual physical barrier helps rein in those overeager children.
Yeah, I've done a few live shows myself, and I, you know what, a kid will run up to me and want to hug me.
Yep.
Wait, hold on, back off. And I don't want to be too explicit about the back off thing, you know, because they're kids and they're having fun. But I usually look at the teacher or look at the adult in the room, and then they grab them.
If I see a child approaching and I feel like they want to engage, I try to distract them, like, oh, go for an air five.
Oh, yeah.
See, all right, go even higher, jump higher, go higher. Until I'm getting the kids almost, you know, jump 3 feet in the air and do a backflip. And then by then they're worn out, ready to go sit down. And we've dodged the situation tactfully.
That's what my friend Dave Scale, he says high five, but he puts his hand up, yeah, like 6 or 7 feet in the air.
Yep.
And the kid can't reach it. So.
But, you know, they try. You know,
oh,
they,
yeah.
They try.
Have you had any experience doing things like balcony shows or things that create distance between you automatically?
The closest I've done is one driveway show for a family. So I sat in the cul-de-sac and performed, and then they all sat on their individual driveways and watched the performance. That's the closest we've come to that. Again, the area I'm working, it's a lot of families with large backyards, so they've naturally got a place to be safe. So we haven't quite had to be as creative as some other folks have.
One of my friends is doing a drive-through performance where the people drive through. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of places do that kind of thing.
So is that new?
There's a crab restaurant in Richmond, Virginia that one of my parents went to, and it was originally, you know, a sit-down restaurant. They literally gutted the entire inside of the restaurant and paved it over, and now it's a drive-through restaurant. So I think that's going to be the future for a while.
Yeah, for a while. So you have some ideas for unique venues to do for Zoom or virtual shows?
I do. This is an idea inspired by Stuart McDonald's virtual show.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of guys, you know, they're just trying to pitch their show to individual families. Much as I hate to say it, you know, my virtual show can seem less valuable than my live show.
Right.
I've done everything I can to pack as much fun into it, and I try to talk to people who appreciate that value. But every once in a while, it's a hard sell.
Yeah.
What Stuart's big, brilliant idea was what if we kind of latch on to something else that has a strong value proposition? In his case, he's partnering with the Croswell Opera House. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've canceled their entire summer program. but they still want to connect and interact with their clients and their fan base. Mm-hmm. So Stewart wrote a original theatrical show. I think it's 2 hours long with an intermission. He comes and does that show, and it's limited to 15 people, and it's done by Zoom. But essentially, he's getting his marketing done by the Opera House. They contact their list and say, hey, this big show is coming out. And so I've actually reached out to some theaters that I've worked with in the past, and I wanted to say, hey, this is a concept that works. You know, I don't want you to lose the people you're interacting with because of this. You know, here's something you can offer them. All you have to do is say yes, send out an email I give you, and, you know, we can put on a show. And so it's a win-win for all three of us. The families get a show for a very reasonable price. The theaters get a show for no effort on them. They send an email, they're done. And I get some more flight time with my show and make a little bit of money performing it without, you know, making a lot of phone calls and doing a lot of heavy lifting on the marketing. So we're really taking advantage of what we all can offer.
That's a great idea, because right now, all of the theaters, you know, they're having such a tough time because they've been closed for 3 months.
Right. So this brings revenue to them in a way they never could. And I've made it work with the Lyric Theater in Blacksburg, Virginia, which I had done a live show there. So I had a good rapport with the general manager there, and she was willing to take a risk on it. And so far, we've done 3 performances for their summer camp program there. And we're getting ready to launch the full version of it that's going to go out to everyone in the Virginia area.
That's a brilliant idea. It's your idea. I'm working it. A lot of people are doing it. I think it's a great, great idea, and do not pass this up.
Yeah, we're one of the few art forms that can pivot. I think we should really lean in on that.
Yeah.
I also put together a magic trick tutorial video that I sent out to all the summer camps who canceled on me. I said, hey, I know we're not going to work out this year, and I know your campers aren't there, but I'm sure you still want to do something fun for your campers. So here's a video. You can put your name on it. Tell them it's from you. And you can put it in there as a special activity from Camp XYZ. They've been really appreciative of that. If, you know, they had nothing to send them, and here's a free piece of high quality recorded content, and gets my name out there. And that's led to some virtual shows for birthdays and stuff.
Let's move on to a fact or something John just made up. You want to do that?
Yeah, sounds great.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline. You tell me if it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it. Sound like fun?
All right. Lay it on me.
Here we go. Headline number one. Zach once bet $500 of someone else's money on his own escape trick.
That's actually true.
Tell me about that.
So I was performing at a ukulele festival in the southeastern part of Virginia. Mm-hmm. I was going to do the 500-foot rope escape for the very first time. I learned it from scam school on YouTube because I'm a millennial. That's where I learned some of my magic tricks.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to perform it, but I realized part of the stakes of it to get people to really tie you up tight, make it convincing, is there has to be money on the line. People are all afraid to tie somebody up, but for $500, you know, they'll tie you up real tight.
Yeah.
So I went to one of the ukulele players and said, hey, I guarantee you I'm not going to lose this money, but will you give me five $100 bills so I can make this trick look good? And
he's a ukulele player.
Yeah. She played dramatic music I was escaping to. I was worried because I'd never done it on stage before, but I got out, so nobody lost their money.
Was there something about a different type of rope or something?
Yeah, I was supposed to, well, the trick is supposed to be done with pretty thick rope. It part makes getting out a little bit easier, but I just went to Walmart and bought like the cheapest rope I could find and ended up being like pretty skinny rope. And while he was tying me up, I was like, oh, this
gulp.
Is definitely the wrong rope. This is going to be a struggle. Yeah, I was like, oh, I made a mistake.
You escaped. All right, second headline. Zach once did a show in high heels.
Yeah, that's a true fact. I did that.
Why?
Well, so I had one of those appearing umbrellas where you pull it out of your coat and they pop. It's like a manipulation type trick. And I really wanted to do it, and I couldn't think of a good reason. And then Tom Holland of Spider-Man fame was on Lip Sync Battle. And he did a routine where he danced with an umbrella to Singing in the Rain, but then the song changes to Rihanna's Umbrella, and he does a costume change into a very scandalous outfit and high heels, and it's, you know, it's a little exotic. So I was like, I'm going to make the magic version of that. And so I did that trick, and you know, nobody knew I was in high heels until suddenly you could see, you know, way more of my legs than you see in most magic shows.
All right. Okay, next headline. In high school, Zach was known as Zach the Maniac.
No, I don't think that's true. I was known as Zach Attack to my grandfather, but I was about 4 at the time, so nobody called me Zach the Maniac. Maybe that'll be my new character for the new show.
That's right, I just made that one up. All right, you ready for the last one?
Okay, one more.
Here we go. Zach once did an undercover magic show that surprised a woman so much she jumped in a lake.
Oh man, I remember this.
Oh, do you? Oh. So it was true.
That, oh yeah, that's true. That's true. Yep. It's hard to remember if it's not true, huh?
Yeah.
There was a girl, she was turning 21, and her mother called me and said she only wants two things for her 21st birthday, a magician and a pinata.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to surprise her with a magician, but we want you to come in just like regular clothes, and we're going to introduce you as our neighbor. So I come over and she says, hey, you know, your neighbor's come to see your party. He just moved. So glad to have him. And then I say, huh, what's that behind your ear? And I pull a coin from behind her and she's like, no, our neighbor is a magician. No way.
Our neighbor is a magician.
Yep. And we were standing on her dock out in the lake. And that's when she like started spinning around and she lost her balance and fell into the lake.
Was it from the coin in the ear trick?
It was. She was overwhelmed. She really was a gigantic fan of magic, and it ended up being a really good party. She had so much fun, and then her parents took us jet skiing on the lake afterwards, so I got to go jet skiing for the first time.
Oh, nice, nice. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts of doing variety entertainment, is you never know who you're going to be performing for. Sometimes they'll take you jet skiing.
That was Fact or Something John Just Made Up.
Ah. We have a couple of fan questions. You ready for some fan questions?
Absolutely. Let's get some fan questions.
Okay. Conrad Cologne, a terrific magician out of New Jersey, asks, well, first he says something, and then he asks, first he says, okay. Zach is a really great guy. He delivers a polished, high-class experience to all his clients. I'd love to know his thoughts on two different questions. Effect selection and audience participation at a distance.
Okay.
Two different ones.
All right, well, I'll break it down. Thanks, Conrad, for that those kind words. We've done some showcases together in the New York, New Jersey area, so that's where we run into each other.
Okay.
So effect selection-wise, err on the side of things that have magical moments but don't have in-the-hand moments. I know in-the-hand moments are like every magician's favorite thing, but try and stay away from them. In my show, a thing that wasn't there but is now is I do a multiplying bottles routine, even in a kid's show. I never reference what's in the bottles in any way. That has become a signature piece that people are loving. And I do the floating table. I do Eric LeClerc's sponge balls from the mouth. So I still get sponge balls in my show, but now I'm doing it as solo pieces that are still amazing. And the kids still, they point, they laugh. Things like that are awesome.
Mm.
You know, I had to cut The Miser's Dream from my show. That's just... You touch the kid too much for that, you know, that had to leave my show. And I miss it. I love that effect, but it's just gone now. And he said more about audience interaction.
Yeah, anything. By the way, back to effect, anything mm-hmm. touching anybody nowadays is a no-no, right?
Yeah, I've had some fights with some of my magician friends. They're like, hey, can you help me write a version of this that, you know, touches the kid less? I'm like, unless we're writing a version that touches the kid none,
I'm going
to tell you to drop that from your show. I'm not going to give you any ideas unless you commit to, like, we find a version where you do not get a kid up on stage. It's not worth the risk.
Yeah, there's something I had to drop from my show where something flies to the, instead of flying into the audience, which is what it used to do, it flies mm-hmm. to the side, which is usually fine. But some kid from the audience runs and starts and grabs my prop that popped to the side. And I had to strike the entire routine from my show. because I'm afraid that might happen again. And who knows?
Yeah. I used to do a change bag silk routine where a lot of the silks fall through the hole in the bag. And, you know, there's good comedy there, but every once in a while you get a child who wants to come up and help you pick things up. You know, they want to be helpful and, you know, nothing falls on the floor in my show anymore. Everything goes in the dump bag or it's in my hand. So there's no moment where a child wants to jump on stage and grab things.
Right. Now, what about audience participation?
So audience participation wise, if I need a child to make a choice or a selection, big part of mine is being fancy as Conrad. So I'm telling you, raise your pinky because we're very fancy. So I look for children raising their pinkies, being very prim and proper. And I point to one of them and I have them stand up where they're at. You know, they make their choice, they make their selection, they say their magic words, something like that. So you still get that moment of being picked, being selected. They just don't come up on stage. And honestly, it made me aware of how much of my material never needed a kid on stage. And, you know, it made me a little aware of how much some of my tricks, the kid just was a magic wand holder. And it's really challenged me to write more engaging things. So when I do have a kid up on stage again, that kid is going to be working their butt off because I'm going to have so many things for them to do, because I'm never going to have a child be a magic wand holder again now that I've realized how guilty of it I was.
Well, yeah, that brings us to when and if this pandemic thing is ever over, what kind of plans do you have?
It depends on how many phone calls I get, obviously. You know, someone has to invite me into their space and say that they're excited to do it. But, you know, once I'm probably going to err on the side of being more cautious than some other folks, I'm going to not make a big marketing push to be out there again until I feel confident that I've been safely vaccinated and I'm not going to spread anything. And that's a big part of it for me.
I do think that people will be leery, even if there is a vaccine. It's still going to be a while before you're touching anybody or anybody's touching you or you're close to anybody. Even if there is a vaccine and even if let's say tomorrow everything was cured, I think there will still be people with that fear.
Yeah. And that's why I'm glad I have this show that I have now. So you know, it could be 5 years down the road and someone still wants me to do a socially distant show. I'm ready. Mm. You know, I just pack up that case instead of the other case and that show's ready to go.
It's in your pocket right now.
Mm. Yep.
Yep. So do you have some advice for someone who wants to get into social distancing shows? They're not doing it right now. What would be your best advice to them?
My best advice would be to go back to your magic backlog, go back to your catalog of what you have on hand and, you know, challenge yourself to interact with something that you've never had before. There was things that were gathering dust and I'm like, huh, I put that trick out of my show because it didn't have an audience volunteer. Now is the perfect time to come back to it. So you've probably got a virtual, a socially distant show in your attic. You just need to go and dust it off, you know?
Yeah, we're collectors of magic gack.
That's a good word for it.
That was actually Steve Trash's word. I can't take credit for that. But if we look on our shelves, I imagine we have all sorts of things we haven't used in years, I imagine.
Yeah. And that's one thing I liked about virtual shows too, is I got to do some really gimmick tricked out stuff that I never got to perform ever. Cause you know, I don't have to worry about anyone wanting to respect it now. They can.
Yeah. So how can somebody get your guide?
I wrote a pamphlet on all the tips I pass out to families and parents on what they do for social distance shows. So if you want to read that, you can shoot me an email at info@zachalexandermagic.com. Or go to my website, zachalexandermagic.com, and there's a big heading that says social distance shows. Just click on that and fill in your email, and it'll pop up right in your inbox automatically. So you can get that and use that as a template to see, you know, if your show follows all these rules that I'm telling the parents to follow, then you know you're ready to get out there and start performing again. So go for it.
Before I let you go, do you have some sort of social media or anything else other than how someone can get your guide?
Yeah, go ahead and follow me at Zach Alexander everywhere, especially Instagram. That's where I'm the most active. I'm posting performance photos. You can see my new costume I made where I have a matching mask. So if you want to take a look at how to wear a mask, but still theatrically, take a look at that.
Interesting.
I also post my virtual show. You can see it in its entirety, my camp virtual show on YouTube at Zach Alexander Magic on YouTube. So take a look at that if you want to see, you know, I'm not the best magician of all time, but I'm out there and I'm performing and you can watch it and say, damn, I could do that. Then you can go do it. You know, bring some magic, bring some joy to folks.
I've seen it myself. It's very inspiring to watch.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed that. That's why I put it up there. You know, I don't want to hide what I'm doing. I want to put it out there to inspire more people to do it too.
Yeah, well, you've inspired me. Thanks, Zach, for doing my show. That was fun.
You're welcome, John. Thank you so much for having me. That was awesome. That was so much fun.
And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist Podcast. Make sure to order Zach's free guide. Just shoot him out an email and he'll make it happen. Also, make sure to leave us a 5-star rating. And if you have a minute or two, leave a nice review. It really helps a lot. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.